Okay. Okay. Somebody asked me, my name is Russell, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group, and I haven't had a necessary have a drink since January 25th, 1981. It's good to be here. And so somebody asked me at the bar there, he says, what step are you on? I said, I don't have a clue, but I don't think anybody else had a clue. Then Wayne told me I was on step 9. I said, well, what am I going to talk about now? When in doubt, there is an answer. I said, why don't I talk about step 9? So I'll probably mention something about step 9 during this deal. I am going to mention something about step 9. I'll talk a little bit about step 9 and stuff around step 9 and stuff like that. I think we'll have some fun. I like coming to this group. This is a great group. After this, I'm going up at 8 o'clock. I'm speaking in Deerfield or something. Something called the Florida House alumni thing or something like that. So, and I was up here this morning. Now, here I drove up here. You know, I'm from South Miami. I'm talking about 30 miles away. And I drove up to Aventura this morning to see my, one of my doctors, and I have to see him every 6 months or so to make sure I'm still going to be on the planet. So I go up and see him, and then I drove back all the way back down. Now I'm here, and then I'm going to drive up further, so I don't even know what's going on. But it's great to be here, and I'm here. So, but I'm going to talk a little bit. Let me talk a little bit about step 9 for a second. I'm just going to talk a little bit about straight step 9 stuff, just fill in the gaps, just to let you know that I actually did it. I don't want you to think I'm like a phony. I am a phony baloney, but I don't want you to think I didn't do this stuff, you know. I got a couple of cute step 9 stories, but I sponsored a guy who's still around. He's still sober, God bless him, named Raphael, and I'll throw out his name. I'll throw him out there. And he was telling me, he did his fifth step with me, and he was telling me that he had one of the things that was a little concerning him was that he had come from, I don't know, one of those countries like Brazil or Venezuela or something. It was down south of the border. And when he was like 20 years old or 21 years old, he was supposed to get married in the church, and there were like 300 or 400 people invited to another guy who was like 20 years old and all decked out in the whole deal with the church wedding and the thing. And he didn't post. He didn't. He left her standing. He hopped on a plane to the United States instead. And you hear this moan from the women in the crowd, you know. So now it's like 30 years later, you know what I mean? 20 years later, and apparently she's married. She has kids now and everything like that. And so he was at step 9. So well, he wasn't even at step 9. He was like 5 or something. He shared it with me and. And so the next day, after he shares this with me, this little story that was, I guess it had been bothering him, you know? If you're not bothered. Well, we're going to talk a little about it. If you're alcoholic, you're botherable, you know? I have that story, you know, he says you're upset because you're upsettable. These are the kind of things that make you upsettable, you know? I mean, alcoholics are restless, irritable, discontent, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, you know? So the one of the things you want to do so that you don't drink is you don't want to be restless, irritable, and discontented. And one thing that can make you restless, irritable, and discontented is a feeling of guilt. I hate guilt. I mean, guilt is, I hate guilt, I hate fear. Fear and guilt, bad. Not good for alcohol. It's not really good. You know what I mean? We like magnified. It's not a good thing. So feeling guilty. I mean, we feel guilty for crap that we shouldn't even feel guilty about. But I mean, we're just guilty. You know, the wrongdoings of others fancy to real have power to even kill. I mean, imaginary shit drives us nuts. So, but you know that deal. You know that deal. You know when you screw up or you think you screwed up. You know what I mean? Because alcoholics, you know, we worry about what other people think about it. Not you guys, because. You guys are obviously cut above that, but some of the alcoholics, the guys who have the real alcoholism that I hang out with, they're incessantly worried about other people think about them, and they say shit like, I don't give a shit what other people think about them, but the more they protest that they don't care what you think about them, I know they really worry about that shit, you know, so, because people that really don't worry about that stuff don't even talk about that stuff, because why would they talk about it? It's not even on their mind. But when you worry about what other people think about you, because you think so lowly of yourself. You think you're such, you're always comparing how you feel with other people look, and they always look better than you feel. When you're of that ilk, you know, then you're constantly monitoring yourself. You're constantly monitoring how you feel, how you look, you know, what you're wearing compared to everybody else. Everybody else looks like they're doing better than you are. And, you know, but you don't let them know that. And that's why you drop names and lie and all that sort of stuff. But when you're of that ilk, when you're very attentive to, you know, how other people react to you. You know, you want to blend in. You want people to like you. You want people to say things like you're right. You know, and so they, you know, you don't want people to say you're wrong. Or, you know, you don't want people to contradict you or, you know, and all that sort of stuff. You're like very sensitive. You know, I told my sponsor I was sensitive. He says, no, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. So, you know, it's a difference. So in any event, so when you're like that. What happens, I talked about this last week, I actually have a little bit of a problem. I love newcomers. I need newcomers. I really need newcomers big time. I need to hang around new people so badly because I need to be reminded all the time. The only bad thing about feeling great all the time, even when you're not feeling great, is the only bad thing about feeling great is you forget what it was like when you didn't feel great. And maybe that's what happens to people that stop going to meetings or stop sponsoring people. They don't necessarily feel bad, but they forget what it's like. Maybe they feel good, but they forget what it's like to feel bad. They forget what it was like. And so then they don't have the gratitude, you know what I mean? I don't know whether I'm just talking, but I hang around enough meetings that I remember, but I do remember that there was a time in my life, only for the first 15 to 20 years I was sober, but there was, and certainly before that, there was a time in my life where if I screwed up, like let's say you went to a meeting, let's say you were chairing the meeting, okay? You don't even have to be chairing the meeting, let's say it's like one of these discussion deals, okay? And it goes around, there's like 50 people in the room, you know what I mean? And nobody's listening to what anybody's saying because they're just thinking about what they're gonna say and what they said and everything like that. So they're going around the room. So I would say something, whatever. I'd say something. But it doesn't matter what I would say. And then I'd think about what I said and how, you know, it didn't really sound good. It didn't sound right. And then God forbid, some guy would sort of like semi crosstalk, you know, at the end and say, well, I don't agree with what Russell said. You know, he might say something like that, which is, you know, grounds for being shot in fucking AA. You know what I mean? You know, you're not supposed to. Do you know, I don't know if you know this, in the Oxford group, they had a deal. You know, the Oxford group was the Oxford movement. That's where AA started. They called them the drunks of the Oxford group. And the Oxford group had a deal where they read the Bible instead of the big book. And they would read the Bible and they'd go around the room. They'd have discussion meetings and people would talk about what's going on in their lives. And they had something called, you ready for this? This is gospel. This is the truth. They had something called correction. Did you guys ever hear about this? No. Okay. This is why we split off from the Oxford group. this is why in AA there's no crosstalk. Now I have a group on Saturdays. You ever want to have a go to a you ever want to experience crosstalk? You need to come to my group on Saturdays. We have a group. It's open. Number one, so it's alcoholics and non-alcoholics, and there's crosstalk. And you want to come there if you really want to see gladiator shit. You know what I mean? You want to see Spartacus. Gladiator, no holds barred, you know, you're full of shit, you know, you're such an idiot, you know, you want to hear the real deal, you come to that, you want to be rebuked, you come to that meeting, right? You just pray, don't let it be me, you know, just don't say anything, you know, don't make yourself a target, you know, and then don't complain, you don't want to be complaining at that meeting. So in any event, they had this thing called correction, okay, at the Oxford group, and what would happen is, they go around the room, like we go around the room with discussion meetings, you'd say something, and then after you started talking, the group would correct you. You get that? You know? You get corrected in front of other people with love. You know, it's a Christian group. They correct you with love. But, you know, if you're an alcoholic, there ain't no such thing as correcting with love. You know, it's like you take out the gun, you shoot the son of a bitch. You know what I mean? You know, and so the alkies couldn't take it. The alkies, you know, somebody would say, well, brother, I think you're wrong about that. He says, well, go fuck yourself, you know? Excuse my language. I know it says profanity, but something's got to be said at certain level, you know. Um, Well, I almost feel like telling a Ray O'Keefe story, but I'm not, because I love him. I need to protect his memory. No, never mind. But in any event, one day, I'll tell you in private one day. But in any event, because alcoholics, that's the way we react to any type of what seems like criticism. So, you know, but what happens is, what happens with an alcoholic is somebody corrects you or says something or hurts your feelings or does anything like that. You know what I mean? Or even if they don't do something like that, if you do that to yourself, you know, that voice, you know, the voices, you know, you're driving along, you're a piece of shit, you ought to die, you know, who the hell you think you are, everybody knows you're a phony piece of shit, you know, all that stuff that's going on with you guys, you know, and, you know, that deal that never leaves you and, you know, you try to make believe it's not there, you know, but it's always, it comes back somewhere. Where does it come from, you know, and it's that kind of stuff that condemning, you're a piece of crap, you'll never make it, you know, that kind of stuff that causes people to commit suicide and do all sorts of bad things and shit like that. You know, that's part of our disease. That's alcohol. That's the real alcoholism. Centers in our mind, not our body, you know. It's there. If you drink, it'll go away. You can drink it away, you know, but then it reaches a point when you're drinking and it gets stronger. It's a bad deal. You know what I mean? It's I don't know, there's something weird about it. You drink it for a while, for a few years, and it sort of goes away, and you're top of the world, you don't give a crap what other people think about you. And then what happens is you continue to drink and it gets worse and worse and worse. It's a strange thing. I don't understand it. But in any event, but I've been there. I've been to that jumping off place. I know the deal. I know I've rented room in that deal, on that land. I know that land. I've been there, okay? So I took a caravan in that land for a few years. And I know of what I speak, you know? Listen, by the way, did I say I was an alcoholic? I did say that. I am an alcoholic, by the way. In case you said, I'm not sure whether this guy's an alcoholic or not. You guys know I'm an alcoholic now, right? I know you know. Okay, so because I speak your language, the language of insanity. Okay, so here's the deal. So what happens is when you're an alcoholic, you know, I could spend an hour just on this one thing, guilt. You know, when you're an alcoholic, what happens, hey, I could spend a lifetime on this shit. If you're an alcoholic, and I did, and I drank over it. When you're an alcoholic, when you feel like you did something wrong or something stupid, like you said something at a meeting, you said something wrong, and of course you're convinced that not only was it stupid, that everybody in the room knew it was stupid. As a matter of fact, not only that everybody in the room knew it was stupid, you got that other alky thing, because you're so important, you're so self-centered, and all you do is think of yourself. Well, if all you do is think of yourself, everybody else must be thinking about you too. That means everybody in the room heard it and thinks you're stupid, and you want something, they're all thinking about it now. They're gonna all think about it for the next week, the next 2 weeks. You can't even go back to that frickin' group, you know what I mean? You know, what's the use? I might as well drink or kill myself, you know what I mean? So that's alcohol. So this guy, so this thing about leaving, you thought I forgot about the wedding thing. So this guy, you thought I forgot about that. How many people forgot about the wedding thing? Okay, this is all to explain the wedding deal. So this guy was, it bothered him, you know, because he left this gal at the altar, and no matter how much he drank and drugged and ran around and screwed around and everything and all that sort of stuff, he could never forget, because he had that, you're a piece of shit, you know, you left the guy at the altar, you're a piece of shit, you're a piece of shit, you're a piece of shit. He had that voice telling me he was a piece of shit for like 30 years. He didn't know where it came from. It came from leaving that girl at the altar. You see, when he left that girl at the altar, the Lord planted this thing in some, and he says, you're a piece of shit. And he couldn't get rid of it. He didn't know how to get rid of it. He couldn't drink it away. He couldn't do anything away because, you know, because that's the deal, you know? What?
Little girl.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm sorry. She okay? We'll have a seat for her at another meeting later on in the road, you know. In any event, so he told me, so the next day after he tells me this, he says to me the following. He says, well, I'm on my way. He says, well, what do you mean? He had about 5 months or something like that. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I'm leaving to Venezuela tomorrow. I said, I got my ticket. I said, really? Why are you going? He says, I'm going to find that girl and I'm going to apologize. And I said, Raphael, listen, buddy, she's forgotten about you. She's married. She's got 4 kids. You know what I mean? She's living a happy life. Listen, you really want to make amends for her? You try to avoid her at all costs. You know what I mean? She ain't never want to see you again. You're showing up at the house. You're ringing the doorbell saying, I'm here. I know I'm late. And I'm up, and I apologize, you know what I mean? I was wrong, you know? Listen, if she happens upon your path, now you're willing to make amends, right? if the Lord happens to feel that you need to talk to her, you know something? You'll probably walk out of here. She'll be parking her car. You know what I mean? She'll be there. But why don't you just stay away? Why don't you just stay away from that deal? So I think, I mean, my theory is it requires some sort of prudence. You know, I get a lot of these guys, they want to, because that's what alcoholics do. They're never really, it says, make them, unless it'll hurt somebody else. You know, what we want to do is we want to feel better at other people's expense. Mm-hmm. We don't really give a shit about other people. You know, that's how alcoholics, it's not about saying you're sorry. I mean, if it was about saying you're sorry, I've got a PhD in your, I'm sorry. I've got a PhD and I'm sorry. But I was never really sorry. It's not like you're sorry. Sorry. Sorry for what? You know what I mean? I'm not sorry. It's that I just don't want you to make me feel bad. So this is the way it works. I say, you know, I blew up your house. I said, you know, so I blew up, what's your name?
Julie.
So I blew up Julie's house, you know. You know, she shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't, because of, you know, what you said to me. Well, screw you, what you said to me the other day. You know, I blow up your house. So I say, I'm feeling, I got that voice, you know, maybe I shouldn't have blown up her house or something like that. And so I say, Julie, he says, and you don't even want to talk to me because I blew up your house. And I say, Julie, so listen, I'm sorry I blew up your house. I'm sorry I blew up your house. And so she doesn't say, oh, don't worry about it, Russ. It's okay. Don't problem. I didn't need that house anyway. Nothing. I'm glad you blew it up. She doesn't say. She looks at me like she's not like immediately forgiving me. And I go to her. This is when an alcoholic guy says, what's the problem? What's your problem? I said I was sorry. I said I was sorry. What's your freaking problem? I said I was sorry. What are you doing? Why are you making me feel bad more? I said, I'm sorry I blew up your damn house and killed your dog. I'm sorry. You know something? Now I'm glad I did it, you know? Yeah, well. So it really has nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with, I say I'm sorry. You're supposed to say I forgive you. Then I feel better and I don't give a crap and I go on with my life. So, you know. So I did a lot of amends. I did amends with my first wife and stuff like that. I did that deal with men's with my son and a lot of deals. But what I want to talk about, because you got to do it, but I did it with the help of sponsors. I told them before what was going on, and they gave me an idea, and when the Lord put in my way, and sometimes I had to go and hunt them up, and they were scary, some of them. And you know, all my amends turned out okay. They turned out fine, you know. And I have a great story about my amends with my wife, but I really want to talk about something else now. And my poor first wife, you know, I was such an asshole to, you know, and really. Unbelievable. I mean, the one story I'll tell you about my former, who was a saint. My former wife was a saint. Oh shit! I got to make sure I'm taping this. I got to make sure my current wife never sees it. Okay, that's a sad. That's a scary thing. You know, this one goes in the garbage. Okay, and she listened for that. What did you say about your first wife? Why do you always say she was nice? You know what I mean? Okay. So in any event, so my first wife, after I got kicked out of the house because I wouldn't stop drinking. She gave me a choice. She said, it's either me or the booze. So, you know, whatever, you know. Whatever. Go figure, you know what I mean? That's why she's my first wife, you know? Giving an alcoholic the choice. Can you imagine? Me or the booze, you know? Booze doesn't talk back, you know what I mean? That's a simple deal, you know what I mean? Booze is always there. It doesn't talk back, you know? Treats me nice, I like booze, it likes me, you know, all that sort of stuff. So in any event, but I did choose the booze. But in any event, she was a wonderful gal, and I left her with a child and everything like that. And so she's trying to, I guess she felt guilty, whatever it is, she was trying to, non-alcoholics, apparently, I don't know, I know this now because I've been sober for a while. When they say something like make a solemn thing, you know, love, honor, and obey. What do they say at weddings? They say something at weddings.
Vows
to love, honor. They believe that crap. No, they take it serious. No, I'm serious. They take it seriously. You know what I mean? I mean, you guys heard of the Book of Life? You know the Book of Life. That's the thing that's supposed to be up there. You're in the Book of Life. You go to heaven. You go to the fiery lake. You see, so there's the Book of Life. Well, right next to the Book of Life, there's another book. I'll tell you guys something that's not in the Bible. It's true. I know. I've been talking to them. There's the Book of Life, and then right next to it, there's the Book of Excuses. Now, if your name ain't in the Book of Life, trust me, it's in the Book of Excuses, you know? For many years, my name was in the Book of Excuses, you know? I'm an alcoholic. I'm brilliant. I have every excuse for breaking every vow. Let me tell you something. I'm a vow safecracker, you know? I can get out of any solemn vow in the world. I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. I got a reason why I walked out of that marriage. You know what I mean? She didn't understand me. I was drinking before we got married. She was trying to change me. I had it all down. But you see, here's the deal. I wanted to go out with other women. That's what I want. You know, I mean, that's the reason I wanted it, because I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I step on the toes of others. They retaliate, seemingly out for obligation. But we finally find out that we made decisions in the past based upon self alone, which puts us in the position to be hurt. So my decision was to leave my wife and my child because I wanted to go out with other women. The vows didn't mean anything. I mean, how's a vow going to... What's a vow is going to stand in my way? That would stand in the way of somebody that had integrity. Please, you know what I mean? I mean, I have great integrity. I'm a man of great integrity. That's just shit I tell myself to make myself feel good, you know? It's not true by my actions. But anyway, so we went to see a marriage counselor. She got me hooked up with a marriage counselor during the divorce to see whether we can get it together, because she wanted to try to keep the marriage together. And I felt myself, you ever see that Godfather 3, where Al Pacino says, I got out and they pulled me back. I felt myself, I was already out in the bars, you know, fooling around trying to, you know, get, you know, I wanted what she had, you know. I was willing to go to any length to get it, you know. Believe me. I spent more money on things I didn't need to impress women I didn't even like, even possibly imagine. But in any event, I'd spend anything, you know. So I went out, so the marriage counselor asked her, says, so Ronnie, what are the three things you want to see changed in Russell? And she said three things like, well, I'd like him to come home for dinner, you know, whatever. I don't even know what three things were. I wasn't really listening. I just felt I'm being pulled back into the cage. And so he turns to me, he says, so Russell, what's the three things you want to change about Ronnie? And I said, this is what I said. I said, I just want to date other women. That was the end of the session. Wow. I'm telling you the truth. Mm-hmm. Over. Yeah. Close the book. Over. You know, I didn't even think about how she felt when she said that. I didn't even remember that until I was 10 years sober. That's how little it meant to me. So you see, that's why I'm an asshole-aholic. All alcoholics are assholes. They do shit like that. They say stuff like that. They just don't realize how much they're jerks. But you see, I'm sure I don't even have a conception of what a selfish asshole I am. You understand what I'm saying? I don't see myself the way God sees me. You understand? But in the little I've learned about myself over the last 10 or 15, 20, 30 years, I realize I'm not a good person. You know? You know, new people know that they're good people. Guys with 5 or 10 years know that they're good people. You know what I mean? But I've been around in AA for 33 years. I know I'm not a good person. I know I'm a terrible person. You understand? Now listen, I'm a terrible person, but you see, he's great, you see. So that's why what you want to do is, even a terrible person can be incredible if you grow in his image and likeness. Mm-hmm. If you turn your will and your life over to him, then you have inspirational thinking. Your thoughts and your statements aren't your thoughts and statements. You start thinking after him and doing his will, and he happens to be cool. He's all right. I'm no good. You understand what I'm saying? That's why I hope I never show up at me. You don't ever want to see me show up in a place like this. You know, this ain't me talking. Believe me. If you heard me talking, we'd clear this joint. So that's the deal with that. So in any event, here's the deal. So I went up to Ronnie, and I went up to her, and my first wife. She was in the hospital. She had ovarian cancer or something. They were cut in. I saw her in the hospital, and I told her, you know, my story and what I do. And I said, I didn't say I'm sorry. I mean, what I said was, I just want to tell you, this is what I did, and these were my actions, and I was wrong. I was wrong. I just thought, you see, I could say I was sorry all the time, but I never said I was wrong. I said I was wrong when I did this. I was wrong when I did that. You know, I hate, I want to give people that. I want to give people that I'm wrong and they're right. Don't you love when, I love when people say, you know, Russ, you were right. You know, when somebody tells you you're right, man, you feel like you're walking on a cloud. You know what I mean? I'm sorry doesn't do it for me. You're right and I was wrong. That's what does it for me. That's worth like $100. You know what I mean? And I went up to her and said, you know, when I did this, when I said that, when I did this, I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. Then you could say you're sorry for that, because then at least you know what you're sorry for. You know what I mean? You're saying what you're sorry for. You know what she said to me? This is amazing. This is going to blow your mind. She said, I thought I was at fault. Do you believe that shit? She says, I thought I was at fault. She was carrying around that, like, she thought she was to blame for the marriage going down the hill. I said, listen, if you didn't divorce me, we'd never be able to talk like this. I was insane. You know what I mean? I mean, that's incredible to be free of that and be able to talk. I'm free of that deal. She's free of that deal and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the promises. So does anybody know when the promises come, when they start? What? Okay, what? Somebody speak louder. Make believe that you're not scared of what other people think about you. Where do they start? Page 83. So the promises start after, where are they? Let me see it.
Bottom right hand side.
Page 83 so I can find it. Okay, right there. Okay, yeah, okay. You're wrong. I had that marked already, but you're wrong. I'm going to tell you where you're wrong, but don't worry about it. You're not real wrong. You're not real wrong. That's the predominant theory is they start after step 9. You know what I mean? But that's not where they start. I'm going to prove it to you. I know. Okay. Here we go. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. So you got to be what? What?
Halfway through.
What is it? We've left that area of discussion. And by the way, you're wrong. You're wrong. Not 6. Okay, here. Let me go. If we are painstaking about this phase, no, you're wrong. There are keep on. There's only 12. You know, keep on going. Okay. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That's pretty cool. Well, let's keep on going. We will not regress the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. You know, you go from that deal I was talking about, where you feel like you're, where you're at a meeting and you say something stupid, and you can't stop thinking about it for a week and a half, the stupid thing you said in the meeting, and you think everybody else thought you said, you know, and all that sort of stuff. That's the kind of life you lead. The life of an alcoholic is to constantly bring up to yourself your stupid mistakes, you know what I mean? That you're convinced not only you're thinking of, that everybody else is thinking of and judging you, you know? You go from that to understanding where all the mistakes you made in your life are great. Now, in order to explain this to you, I got to go into the book of Genesis, okay? I got to take you into the book of Genesis. And we'll get real religious. It's all based on the Bible. So this will give you an idea. So anybody ever heard of Joseph, the boy of many, the coat of many colors? You know that deal? So here's what happened. What happened was this. Okay, this is the story. This is a major deal in the book of Genesis. Major. Major if you study it, okay? So Joseph was the youngest kid, and his father loved him the most. He had about 10 or 20, I don't know, brothers. They hated his guts. They hated his guts because he was a spoiled child. And so what they did was they decided they were all going to kill him, you know, because these guys were pretty rough back there. They were like the Taliban. They're going to kill him. And they decided not to kill him. They threw him in a ditch. They got together, his brothers, and decided to sell him to slave traders. So they sell this like 13 or 14, 16-year-old kid to slave traders. They take him into Egypt, okay? He goes and works for some farmer in Egypt, some guy named Potiphar. The guy throws him in jail for wrongdoing, saying he's messing with his wife. He goes to jail for 3 years, 3 or 4 years. Finally gets taken out of jail. He reads a dream for the Pharaoh or something. Next thing you know, it's 25 years later, okay? And he is, you ready for this? Vice Pharaoh. I mean, I'm not, this is serious, this is Emmett, this is the real deal. He's like the second most powerful guy. This little 13, 15-year-old kid, he's the second most powerful guy in Egypt, okay? He's the main guy. He's like 40 years, like the main guy. Meanwhile, there's starvation going on in Israel back there in the deal. And so the father said, now they've told the father that Joseph is dead. He's dead or something like that. So the father says, go over to Egypt, see whether you can get some, you know, groceries or something. So they go over to Egypt. This is the truth. They go over to Egypt. And they go up and they're dickering with the second most powerful guy, Joseph, and all of a sudden in the middle of this deal they recognize that this kid, the brothers, is the kid they sold into slavery. So they're scared out of their mind. They're freaking out. He's going to kill us. He's the second most powerful guy. And he knows that they know that who he is. And he says to him this. This is what he says to him. He says, this is a major deal in the Bible. He says, listen, he says, don't be scared because I forgive you. I'm fine with you. I'm cool with you. He says, I know you meant it for evil, but the Lord used it for good. I know you meant it for evil, but the Lord used it for good. Everything you did was meant for evil. But you know something? Now I'm the second most powerful guy in Egypt. And I can feed you and I can feed my father. And the Lord, and I helped a lot of people. And the Lord used it for good. So what happens is in this deal, this is just the same thing as Genesis. Every rotten, crappy, horrible thing in your life, okay? You get to a point in your life where it's all unbelievably wonderful. Because even though you meant it for evil, you know, when I walked out of my wife, when I said that shit in front of that guy, when I said, I just want to go out with other women, that was evil. That was from the pits of hell evil. You know something? You know why I can talk to you about it? Because the Lord is using it for good.
Amen.
I can tell that story all over the place. The Lord is using it for good. Because the Lord took that evil thing I did, and he used it so I can help and talk to other people about it so they can maybe see something in their own life. You understand what I'm saying? So when all your evil and everything you did gets wrapped up in a testimony where you can save people's lives, you want something? Well, that's a pretty cool deal because you don't have to sit around telling yourself what a piece of shit you are. Does any of that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to move on to the next one now, okay? Here we go. We're going to know a new freedom, new act. No, we will not regret the past. We will comprehend the word serenity, no peace. Now, that's pretty good. I saw a book one time called The Quiet Mind. I had to grab it. I was like 5 years old. I had to grab it. I forget if I read it, it would work. You know what I mean? The Quiet Mind. I've never had a brain that didn't have 15,000 thoughts going through it at the same time. All bad thoughts about me and other people. You know what I mean? I know you're going to find this hard to believe. I'm thinking pretty fast now as I'm talking to you, I suppose. I don't know, but I don't think much anymore. It's too hard to think. I just can't do it anymore. It's too much, you know. And people say to me, he says, well, what are you thinking about? I said, I'm not. Some guy came up to me and he says, what do you think of this? I said, I don't. I'm on a need-to-know basis. I got about four thoughts that run through my brain. I need to go to the bathroom. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I think I'll go to sleep. And that pretty much runs the gamut. That's it, you know? Don't think much more other than that. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we'll see where we are. Experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Wow. I'm a self-pityaholic. Boy, I'm a self-pityaholic. I sit in front of the radio, listening to the same song over and over again. You know, Running on Empty, A Pirate Looks at 40, Only the Lonely, I'm Mr. Blue, you know, Rainy Days and Mondays, all that Karen Carpenter shit, you know what I mean? Anything, I mean, just a thumb-sucking crybaby, feeling, you know, thinking about all the girls, why they left me, thinking about my funeral, I'm there at the casket, they're all around me, he was such a good guy, then I'm like, oh, dead. And so, you know, listen, when you're doing crap like that in your life, you know, alcoholics are incredible daydreamers, they're incredible imaginations. You know, you have grand, what fantasy, like a fantasy world. You live in a fantasy world, you know? I mean, who needs friends? They're all there, you know what I mean? You know? I mean, I used to sit around in bars with 300 people. I could sit in my room with 300 people, and they're all, you know, I like the people in my room while I'm drinking. I like those people because they're all looking at me. They're all thinking about me. They're all liking me. All them Playboy bunnies gathering around me, you know, those imaginary Playboy bunny things, you know, and shit, you know, and killing all those guys I don't like and shit, you know. So, well, you know, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like, but I want to tell you something. It ain't a good deal when you're living your life in your fantasy life. Because the real world is a piece of crap. Because you're not really good in the real world, but in your fantasy life, you're pretty good. But in order to get to the fantasy life, you need a few brewskis or something, you know? That kind of deal. That's something called alcoholism, by the way. It's a bad deal. You want to get away from that. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Now, how about that deal? How about a life where you're not thinking about yourself anymore? What's that? What would that feel like? What would it feel like to not think about yourself? You know, that'd be an interesting thing. You know? And you know, I could never drive in a car without the radio on. Somebody said to me, you know, when you know serenity, when you can drive in the car with the radio off, and I I didn't know what he was talking about because I'd never driven a car with the radio off. I'd never done anything without a TV on or something going or a phone, you know, because I always had to have something going on because silence used to make me uncomfortable. Because then I'd hear my thoughts and they were all bad, always bad thoughts about myself and other people. So I always had to be talking to somebody or listening or watching a movie or doing, I had to be doing something because otherwise there'd be a pregnant pause. It would make me nervous. I was uncomfortable with my thoughts. It says, and you know, and now, you know, to be able, when I do think, to think about how you can help, you know, when I go to a meeting. You know, I used to go to meetings saying, I need a meeting. I need, nothing wrong with that. You know, 10 years going, I need a meeting. I needed this meeting. I need a meeting. Now I go to meetings, I say, you know, see whether there's anybody there I can help. That's what I think about when I go to meetings. Is there anybody there I can help? What can I do to help other people? That's what, you know, it says what the maximum thing right now is to be a maximum purpose to God and other people. That's what it's all about. That's what the 12 step is all about, carrying the message to other people. You know, that's what our, you know, the leaders are trusted servants. The leaders are the ones that serve. They're serving. They're not serving because they feel compelled to serve. They're not serving because they're being forced to serve. They're serving because out of love, they're compelled to serve. You understand what I'm saying? Where they're compelled. It's like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. You get pleasure out of helping other people. What's that bullshit? You know, that's got to be pretty non-alcoholic bullshit. Pleasure out of helping other people? I think I've heard that regular people can do that without meetings, but I don't know. That's, no, I think there are apparently human beings that are built in such a way where they go out and they help people and they devote their life to people. They don't need meetings. They don't do the steps or anything. That's just the way they're built. I don't understand them at all, you know. I'm not even sure they should be called saints or get anything for that because they don't have to overcome the crap we have to overcome to get there. You know what I mean? We got to really, I mean, we got a lot of crap we got to overcome to really give a shit about anybody else. You know what I'm talking about? I think we should get a medal, you know. But in any event, you know, that's what what is Mother Teresa? The guy followed her around, you know. He said, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. You know? I'm sitting with some guy at a Denny's. You know, he's got like 2 days, you know, I've got like, you know, 3 years, and we're having coffee on a Saturday night. You know, Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. It's an old Frank Sinatra song. When I used to dance cheek to cheek with my baby, you know, and I was, so I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, 35, 40 years old, and I got like whatever amount of time I got, and he's sitting there. And we just come from a meeting, the Arts Creek Group, and he says, hey, that was pretty good, but what do you guys do for fun? I don't know how to tell him I'm having a great time. Talking to him, Saturday night in the Denny's, you know? I don't even know how to tell myself I'm having a great time because I don't understand it. I used to be out there cruising for her, you know? For her, the one who's gonna, and I'm sitting here with this schmagag, you know, telling, you know, talking to him, what am I doing? It's crazy. I drive all the way up here to talk to you guys. You know, I say, oh, isn't this exciting? I get to hang out with you, talk to you. Then I get to go from here and I get to go up to the far house and talk to them. You know what I mean? I can't even believe myself. It's absolutely insane. It makes no sense. I can't even get like a reward for that. I mean, it is my reward because it's like Bill, all the guys that get to that point where they're rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven, all the guys that are in the fellowship of the Spirit, you know, all the guys that are where the men are separated from the world, they all get to the same place. The place where what they're interested in is carrying this message and helping other people, and they're excited about it. They're not doing it because, well, I have to do it in order to stay sober. I do it, it keeps me sober. But I don't feel like, man, there's a gun to my head. If I don't say, you know, you sponsor people, you help people, because you're excited to do that, because you feel like you're in the will of God and you're worth something. This is what you put on the planet for. And you know, it's a sad thing. I feel sorry for people. And I'll tell you, and there's a lot of them that are sober for the sake of being sober, and they're, you know, they're going home to work, and living lives of quiet desperation, and they're not getting this deal. They're not getting the, they just don't have the deal. I mean, they're picking up the medallions. I got 10 years, I got 15 years, but man, they're not excited. They're hanging in there. They're trudging the road of happy destiny, you know, and they're trudging that deal, you know. Trudge. So here's the deal. So let's see. Keeps on going. It says right here, it says, our whole attitude about life will change. Well, don't you think? Mm-hmm. I would think so. My attitude's changed, okay? Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Hey, that's pretty good.
I was driving around with Ray O'Keefe. I said, when will I, because all I did was worry about money, 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 money. It's not important. It's right up there with oxygen. Yeah, money, money. So I said, well, when do I get economic security? He said, never. I said, no, the promises. You know, after step 9, you get $1 million or something. No, that's not what it says. Yeah, it says. It says the economic security. He says, it's not what it says, Russ. Read it. I said, it says right here. Fear of people and of economic security will leave us. He says, yeah. He says, the fear will leave you, but you'll always be broke. It just won't bother you, you know? Well, that's true, you know, by the way. That's true. I can tell you that's true, you know. It doesn't bother you that much, you know what I mean? We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. Because when you don't have all that crap going on in your brain, where you're worried about what does he think about me, what does she think about me, and everything, you just sort of come up with it. So, you know, it helps you to think clearer. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. You realize we have that God consciousness. He's doing that stuff for ourselves. So when do the steps start? Okay, well, they start right at the third step. Here's page 63. Okay, I'll read you where the steps, well, not steps, the promises actually start. They actually probably start before this. Here we go. Page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. And it starts as soon as we stop playing God. Whatever that means. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We're his agents. He's the father. We're his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we passed to freedom. You pass to freedom as soon as you lay it all down to him, you know, and give up your will, your life, and everything, and give it over to the deal. Give it over to him. Say you're in charge. That's when you pass through. That's when the promises start. You know why I know that? Because this is what it says. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened. Wouldn't you like some remarkable things to happen in your life? How would you like something remarkable happen to you tomorrow? Man, remarkable. We had a new employer, being all powerful. We provided what he needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him. Here's the two things you got to keep close to him. So you ought to have some idea of who he is. And performed his work well, which means you all have work that you're assigned to do. You all have work you're assigned to do, by the way. Did you know that? You all work. It's not the work you think it is. You got the wrong idea. You think you got all these things that you're thinking about, your little plans and designs. It's not your shit. You know what I mean? You think you got to do a lot of shit. You're worried about all the shit you have to do. The stuff that's been planned for you that you're supposed to be doing has nothing to do with what you think it is. The stuff that you spend hours and hours worrying about that you think are things that you're supposed to be doing are not even close to what you're supposed to be doing. That's why you're so worried and bollocks up, because you're not doing his plans and designs. You're doing your plans and designs. You stay close to him and you perform his work well. You know, now if you get a good sponsor and you go to AA group and you do these things painstakingly, you'll find out what you're supposed to do. You'll go up to your sponsor like I did and you'll say, I have all these money problems. I got all these money problems. I'm dying of money. I'm going to be foreclosed on. He says, you know, Russ, I think it's about time you start making coffee for the group. I'm going to be foreclosed on in my house. He says, yeah, you know, but, you know, we need somebody to make coffee. You know what I mean? In the real world, being foreclosed on your house is important. He's talking about money. There was like no love connection. There's no connection there. But what can you do? You don't want to drink. So I started making the frickin' coffee and everything worked out in the house. And then I had to make the coffee for 18 months. Couldn't get rid of it. You know what I mean? You know, because I was doing his work and his deal. And I didn't even know there was a connection between that and being in the new freedom and the new happy. He says, his work well, established on such a footing. You ready for this? We became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. That's one of the promises. Stop worrying about yourself. No matter how far that is. It's, wait, you know what? And this is before even we took step 3. More and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. There it is. That was just the promise of peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. That's the promises. They're all wrapped up there before step 3. And then it says we were now at step 3. You start getting these things at step 3 if you sincerely take that position. So I walk out of an AA meeting and some kid comes up to me and says, you're Russell, aren't you? I said, yeah. He says, my sponsor says, you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God.
So what am I supposed to do about that? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with a program of recovery where the answer is turn your entire will and life over to the Lord, over to God, you know what I mean? And just forfeit your life to God, and a whole fellowship that tells me we don't want to hear that shit. What am I supposed to do about that? I don't know. Well, you know, I'm going to talk about it anyway because I ain't getting any jollies from you guys. I get jollies from him. I get, you know, listen, I tell my deal. You know, it's like, you know what the book of Ezekiel says? He says, you're the watchman when you get this stuff. You warn the people. If you don't warn the people, the blood's on your hands. You warn the people, the blood's not on your hands. You say, yeah, I told you, buddy. I told you, you didn't want to listen to me, you know? So that's the deal. How, see, we burned an hour, you see? We burned, that's the deal. This was sort of like step nine. I think it was. This is kind of like a step nine thing. I would put the step nine up, but I would do that. That's a step nine. Well, look at these prices. You know, what do you, you know, expect, you know? But I got a cup of coffee, that's it, you know? Thank you very much. God bless you.
Can we have a secretary report?
Sure. My name is Fred. I'm an alcoholic. We're going to have happy hour. We meet here 7 days a week, varying formats. Great.